C1 PR. Number 12A.
Now, the second subject of spirit, of worshipping that vision, that promise, worshipping with all one's heart and love and devotion, that's the subject. And now the subtones tell us the how, tell us the requirements of how to worship it. What is required to reflect this divine being? The first subtone in mind gives us the sense that reflecting God demands absolute consecration of thought, energy, and desire. See, it's now that combination of mind under the big tone of spirit, that worship of thought, energy, and desire. It's a big consecration of thought, energy, and desire. Well, we know that from other sciences, unless we focus our whole attention to a subject, unless we do that, nothing focuses. Can you say that? Nothing comes into focus. And so nothing comes to birth. But the law of spirit tells us, as we concentrate on a subject, as all our various ways of character and life and intention and motive and energy and devotion and so on are all consecrated on that one big subject which we had in the first tone of mind, that is reflection. Starts with that consecration. Then it goes to the second subtone of spirit and says, well, it's the consecration on what? And here it says, well, it's God good. It's consecration of that which we already have of good. See, that's so lovingly. Spirit is that big law where like produces like. And therefore, in order to receive more, we can only get that when we worship that which we already have. Because only worshipping that which we already have is of the nature of good and can bring forth more good. I always feel that this tone is a very, 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 very important point. Because in contact with other people, one always finds that there is a desire to receive more. For instance, to receive more understanding, which is very nice to have that desire, to have more understanding. But that the supply, how do I get at the source of that supply of more understanding? Always through the same nature of what I want to get. Therefore, through the understanding of what I already understand, I get more understanding. Because like produces like. Only understanding produces understanding. Whereas usually in the human mind it is that attitude, well, I don't have enough understanding, or I don't have enough of this and I don't have enough of that, but I desire sincerely to get it. Well, that's no law of demand and supply. In order to get that which we want, we must give that which we want, so to say. And here, this law is presented very nicely. It says, if we are grateful for the good we have already received, we are fitted to receive more. Well, we could also say, if we are grateful and happy and considered with the understanding which we already have, we are fitted to receive more understanding. Only understanding brings forth understanding, like produces like. So it's a tender tone here, which comes to us, to each one of us, and says, now that which you have now grasped in the first big subject of mind, that vision which you have now grasped, no matter how big or how small you term it, that's good. And if we are grateful for that and just worship that and just are happy in that and just enjoy and put all our hope into that, that makes us fit to receive more. But if we take the other attitude where we say, yes, I have grasped something, what I have heard on the tone of mind of the first subject, but it is not enough. I want to grasp more. That doesn't satisfy me yet. I want more. That is very small. I want something bigger. You see, that's the false law. It is devaluating that which one has already understood and received of God. It's devaluating really God and yet asking something more of God. The law she presents here as spirit, the spirit is really the main tone. It's the focal point, tone of spirit, which says, oh, if that which we have grasped as good, as which we have understood, which we have already received as vision, if we just nurture that and just love that and just don't feel I should have grasped more, I should have seen more, if I just love that and ponder that, it grows. It just does grow. You can ask me why. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why it grows, but it grows. That's the law. Just as you would ask me, why does electricity work? I just say, I don't know. I only can see that it does work in this way and that way and according to this law and according to that law. So that is not a question, why is that the law? It is quite enough to see it is the law. Now, that it is the law, we can see and prove as we go on in our study. For instance, perhaps it may relieve you if I tell you how things happen to me when I'm doing these subjects. Say, I take a new subject, there is a fifth subject or a sixth subject, and what happens? Well, what happens is this, I tell you. I read it over, and I think, well, I have known that before. I read it over twice, and I think, well, I don't see any more than what I have seen up to now. But I read it the third time. But what I do, I read it always with that attitude of mind, spirit, soul, of the scriptural note. And I say, I desire to know there is something much deeper in it, and I long to know it, and I put my everything I have into it, and it's foremost in my thought, and so I put the substance of prayer into it, and I say, I just want to know nothing else but that which is in the text, that which the text really wants to reveal, and not what I would like to see in it. So I identify it properly with the revelation of principle, and so with that attitude I go at it. And perhaps for a day, perhaps for 4 days, perhaps for 6 days, just nothing happens. I can read over it and read over it, and it doesn't seem to unveil more. But as I carry it around, something suddenly begins to click and to brighten up. Suddenly something just awakes in me. Maybe an aspect of it may be a tone of it, it may be anything of it, and it will come to each one of us different. That's the law which he says. He says, seek ye, and then he says, yeah, you will find, your father knows and will supply it. That's the law. So then this being, this worshipping that which one already knows and always worshipping again and loving it, that begins to get a law, so to say, into motion, into operation, which says, for worshipping that which you desire and which you love and which you have, I give you more. And more revelation comes to us. And more views comes to us. And suddenly it is brightening and brightening, and more lights are thrown on it, more lights thrown on it, and one begins to see the whole subject from all different angles, and always a new angle and a fresh angle. And then after 8 weeks I come here and I have a whole file of notes, much too much to tell you about it. But it isn't necessary to tell you. What I want to tell you about is the law, because then that law is working in you and is unfolding in you, and the infinite all is giving to you much more than it can give to a single individuality at the moment. So it's a much bigger issue than just to know what I have seen in it. It's not so important to tell you what I have seen in it, but what is important is to see the law that is unfolding in each one of us, a brighter view, a higher view, a broader view, and more, a greater promise. So what she says here is a wonderful truth, that being grateful for that which we already have makes something in us fit. It prepares the ground in us to receive more. It prepares in us a mentality which is more transparent to revelation. It's a law. It's a wonderful law. So we see usually the ordinary sense of prayer inverts that. The usually sense of prayer says, I have not enough, I want more. And so it never gets more. It's always dissatisfied. It goes out from a lack. Whereas the true law of substance goes out from the substance we have and says, that seed has in itself all. That seed has in itself the whole tree, so to say, with all its branches and with all its leaves. Then she goes on to the subtone of soul and presents the touch of soul and says, yes, but that gratitude must be sincere. You get to soul where you can't fool anymore God. Where it must be genuine and sincere. You get the tone of soul as sincerity, where she also says your heart must be near to truth and love. You say that sense also of identity with God, where your heart is near to God and not near to words. Giving thanks. She says giving thanks makes us a hypocrite, or incurs the sharp censure which the master pronounced on the hypocrite. She says, be grateful for life, truth, and love. Now, what can a beginner who reads the first time the textbook be grateful for life, truth, and love if he hasn't studied the synonymous terms and doesn't know what life, truth, and love is? And yet, he already knows the little of life, truth, and love. Because in the first big subject of mind, she has already given us a touch of life, truth, and love. She has given that touch that life is pouring forth more than we accept already, that truth is already doing the right thing, and that love work is already done. And so she can say, well, that's the little you have already received. Be grateful for it. It may not yet be an understanding of life, truth, and love, but prayer, she says, leads you to an understanding. And so how does it lead to an understanding? Here she says, in spirit of spirit, worship that little bit which you already have, be grateful for it, and then in spirit of soul, she says, and so your heart must be near to it, must be one to it, must identify itself with that wonderful promise of life, truth, and love. Your heart must be near to truth and love. Then she goes to principle and says that our gratitude must be expressed principally, namely keeping the commandments. That's the principal way of expressing a quality of principle. And so she says, well, gratitude is shown not in words, but in keeping the commandments, in being strict with oneself, and being obedient to that which one has already perceived as Jesus' command. Then she goes to life and says, but how long have you to be obedient? How long have you to be grateful? How long have you to be sincere and your heart near to God? How long? How long? She comes to life and says, well, in you it must be habitual. Must be a habit. Must be permanent. Must have the sense of life. So it's a habitual struggle to be always good, and so, she says, we become partakers of the good. See, now she gets to the sense of life, which says, you see, common prayer says, no, no, you pray in the morning or you pray at night. And if you have said your prayers, you have done what you have done, what you are asked to do. That is a timely prayer. Here she says, all prayer has nothing to do with giving thanks. It is a constant attitude from morning, noon, and night of striving to live up to that which at the moment one sees as the highest best. Only as much as that. She doesn't ask to live up to something which we haven't yet perceived of. She says, no, be grateful for that which you already have, and so live up to that which you already have. That's accomplishing much. And so she comes to truth and says, in that habitual struggle always to do the best we have at every moment, what happens if you become a new man? So she says, you assimilate the divine character and you become a new man, you are fashioned in God's likeness. A wonderful sense of that fashioned anew in God's likeness. You, in truth, one always gets the answer to the proposition she puts in the first, in mind as in mind. In spirit as mind, she says, divine being must be reflected by man. But how on earth? But how on earth? Well, to answer the how, we have the subtones. And when we come to truth, she says, that's the answer. And so you can see it in the text very clearly that truth always gives that answer. Here it gives the answer, then man will awake in God's likeness. Then he reflects God. But it goes through that wonderful order, and we can't escape that order. So, isn't it here that she says that simply asking that we may love God will never make us love Him? You see, so important. So often we say, yes, I would love God. Somehow, it may be in us an urge, a real clean urge to love God. But says, but how? Simply asking doesn't do the job. But how? Well, here she gives the answer. She says, that comes only in the subtone of truth. To do that, to reflect that love, what have you to do? Subtone of mind says, first you have to consecrate your thought and energy and desire to God. That's the first little love. The first proof of love when you concentrate. That's love. That's a touch of love. Because it needs a touch of love to be consecrated. And then in spirit, she says, and that love is shown in your gratitude for the little bit you already have. Can you love that? Can you love that? Or are you dissatisfied with that? And so that love begins to grow, and then in spirit as soul, she says, and are you grateful for the fact that God is? That God is life, truth, and love? Are you grateful for that? To do that, it needs some love, to be grateful for that mere fact. And so she goes to principle and says, show me your love by keeping the commandments. And as we do that habitually, in the tone of spirit as life, habitually, it becomes a new nature of us. And so in the subtone of truth, you can say, well, now you have it. You become, you assimilate the divine character. And you are molded, fashioned anew, and you awake in God's likeness. Then you are loving. And we are loving. So, loving is not something which we can make up our mind and say, well, I should love God and I should love my neighbor, so I'm jolly well going to love him. I make up my mind I'm going to love. We'll never love him that way. It's a birth. Loving God and loving men is a new birth. And always in truth we find the answer, the form of it, the definite acknowledgement of it. And so, finally, in the subtone of love, spiritual love, she says, all right, what has that spiritual worship done? Says, that spiritual worship has regenerated you. It regenerates. And it gives you the wings which help you to fly above the material worship, and she speaks there of spiritual growth. See, now the promise of spirit is fulfilled, which says, all right, if you worship spiritually, that gives you the wings of promise. That gives you power over error. That makes you fly over the false sense of worshipping. Now, let's see the sequence of it again. That would be question 18. I always feel we should see the sequence of it. If I would have more time, I would you once show how illogical it would be to start at the end of a subject. But perhaps one time I will find time to do that. The sequence is so important. Always to start right and to continue right. Then one ends right. Here, the subject, as we know, is that worshipping by reflecting God, good. We make progress. Well, what is this worship? What does it mean to worship or reflect God, good? What does it imply for us? That it is something tangible and living. So she begins and says in the subtone of mind, we begin to worship spiritually through absolute consecration of thought, energy, and desire. Consecration of thought, energy, and desire to what? It's always on God, on the first subject of prayer. So it takes it over from the first subject. It says, now your worship starts with a consecration of thought, energy, and desire. Now, you concentrate on what? On that which you already have. Come to the subtone of spirit. It says, you worship that which you already have grasped of God good. That which you have grasped and understood of God good, let that be the focus of your worship. Don't scatter the fire, just love that. Don't look for anything outside of that, just worship that. Keep that warm, be happy about it, be thankful for it, be grateful for it. That makes you fit to receive more. And so she goes to the subtone of soul and says, and as we are grateful for the good we already have, and as we gather the good we already have, and as we gather it and gather it, our heart just abides with the good. Begins just to abide with the good. You see, first you have the consecration. Then you have the consecration of the good we already have. That begins to blossom and says, the more I consecrate on all what I have, the more my heart is right there. Is right there. Is right identified with the good there is already. And so as I abide in the good, I come to the subtone of principle. As I abide in the good, I cannot help but do good. Principle says, all right, in that which you are, that do. Principle is always that which asks for doing the thing which we have perceived. So said, all right, do it, do it. How long shall I do it? I come to the subtone of life which says, do it habitually. Do it habitually. And so as I become more and more good in principle, principally good, I'm more and more staying in the good, remaining in the good, becomes habitual, permanent, and so I'm always more supplied with the good. I become partaker of the good. And as I become partaker of the good, I assimilate that whole good. It becomes my new nature. And I come to the subtone of truth where it says that that makes me a new man, a new natured man. I have given birth to my new nature, which are qualities, spiritual qualities. And so in the last tone of love, we see, well, that new man really excludes false worship and just reflects spiritual growth and spiritual unfoldment and spiritual and spiritual and spiritual, more and more of the spiritual. Do you see the sequence of it? Do you see the practicability of it? Everyone would like to make more spiritual progress. That's natural. That's right. But how? But how on earth are we going to do it? We can't do it by making up our minds in a moral way that we jolly well have to do it in some way. It must be a spiritual birth. And unless it is a spiritual birth, every change and every reformation is not secure. It's only apparent. And it can't stand the stress of circumstances. And it can't stand the stress of circumstances. That's why the next big subject of soul starts right away with that we are placed under the stress of circumstances, to see if that second subject has been a new birth or just something which we have made up, just something which we have just professed to, or if it's new and real and tangible and substantial in us. Now, having seen that sequence, let's just go over that whole tone again and again from various point of views. For instance, let's see, I don't know if I tire you with going over these things, but that's what I want to do on a Saturday. And next time, if you feel that it's superfluous, you know that you are very free to leave out the Saturday and just join on the Sunday. But somehow my heart is with all those who feel they would like to get on and don't know perhaps how to study and how to ponder and how to look at things. And I just would like to give that Saturday to those students. Now, let's look at it again from a standpoint. The first prayer was that desire for the allness of God. That's where we start. Having seen that promise of the all mind and the infinite mind, its various promises of life, truth, and love, let's go inwardly further to the second step of spirit, where we say, yes, but that vision is only a vision, only a mental thing. It's only something which is going on in the realm of mentality. So let's put to those dry bones some flesh. Let's substantiate that vision with true, living, spiritual qualities. And that's the second subject.